Now, every last few years, we've always had the time of harvest, but some of the harvest summers have been difficult. Last year was a hard summer in Eretz Yisrael, and it's hard to compare one summer to the next, but for sure this summer was not an easy harvest. And I think as we gather in our harvest, there were good harvests as well. If I think of good harvest, I think of the graduates of our scholars program. On Sunday, the Baruch Hashem, Yisro Chag, would be graduating 25 young women. And as we think, like Shani graduated in the earlier years, another 25, the Baruch Hashem, Tamidot Chacham, and Am Yisrael. 25 women who sat in the Beit Midrash, 25 women who will be teachers and leaders in Am Yisrael. And we're very proud of that harvest. And that brings the simcha, as the harvest brings simcha, the physical harvest, the spiritual harvest to Am Yisrael. But we also have to remember the harvest, have to remember the events that were difficult for us. And when Shani suggested that we dedicate this year in memory of Noam Yaakov, the son of Gila and Chaim Meirson, even though it's hard, but we felt it was the right thing to do, I had the schut to read a few of the writings of Noam, a young man who was only 23, but already had great, deep, analytical thoughts, and even had the initiative to write them down, which at that young age, many don't aren't yet ready to do, and it's actually quite appropriate. One of the essays that he wrote was about tefillah. Another essay was on cheshbon nefesh for these times of the year, and I think it's especially appropriate, Hoshana Rabbah, as we go tomorrow in the face of Hashem on the last of this season, the last big day of Tefillah, the Simchat Torah. Of course, every day is a Yom Tefillah, but a day of special Tefillah to Hashem. It's according to the tradition, it's this 26th day to Briyat Olam. Hoshana Rabbah falls on the 26th day to Briyat Olam. 26, we know, is the gematria of the Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, the name asking for chesed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu through our tefillot. And we have Shani will also say a few words about Noam Yaakov, and to thank everyone for coming and wish a Chag Sameach. And we'll be happy with a good harvest and pray to Hashem that the difficult times will be alleviated.
Behind the scenes of many of Matan's and special programs, including tonight's event. A middle child, Noam Yaakov, was killed on August 7th. He was to be married 3 weeks later. To a daughter of a friend of ours, Naomi Ranan, also sitting here tonight, from Alam Shvut. As I was sitting with Hila a few weeks ago, learning from Noam's letters that he wrote her on his reflections on Tefillah and Avodat Hashem, numerous friends of Matan came to share with Hila words of nechama, words of consolation and encouragement. And then Hila reflected, I wish my life could just return to normal. I wish I could just be known as this nice woman sitting behind the desk in one of Matan's offices. I don't want to be in the limelight, especially not for my salary. And Hila is right. We wish we could turn the clocks back all the time, having life return to normal. But we know, and especially for Hila and her family, that with the loss of a child, life will never be normal again. We don't ask why, we don't ask lama, and instead we ask lama. What can we learn from all this? And even as we speak, the government is inquiring and debating that question. So tonight, we learn in Noam's memory and the Yivui Nishmato. We must reflect not only on the tragedies of the past, but we must anticipate with anxiety and learned experience the challenges of the future, the upcoming days, weeks, months, and years. How do we respond to such crises, whether they be the agricultural ones that we find Am Yisrael encounter post Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, or national political ones? How do we react when we disagree with the government's policies, especially when it is our own? Tanakh and Torah Shebaal Peh, we know, are not works of history. They are works of law, they are works of theology, philosophy, and behavioral conduct. They reflect life issues from a divine perspective in Torah and Nevi'im, and from a human scholarly perspective in the Ketuvim and in Torah Shebaal Peh. It's not by chance that we find similar situations addressed in both, and character responses amongst Chazal modeled after personalities and situations presented in Tanakh. A few years ago, we discussed the famous personality Choni HaMa'agel of Masechet Ta'anit, whom Chazal, through verse and character association, compared to Eliyahu HaNavi and Habakkuk HaNavi. Tonight, we will explore how Nevi'im and our sages reacted to crises of their time and the alternate methods of response. For those who attend Matan's regular Sunday morning classes, you recall that we are in the midst of the anomalous stories of Eliyahu HaNavi. After declaring a famine of his own initiative, catalyzed a process of tshuva during the infamous and idolatrous reign of Ahab and Jezebel, Eliyahu was told by Hashem to flee the land of northern Israel. Lech mizeh. Get away from this, he's told. Either the situation, get away from the ra'af, get away from the people with whom you can no longer relate, and perhaps even Eliyahu. Lech mizeh. Get away from this. Get away from this personality of yours. Get away from this response. After being provided miraculously, firstly by a river in ravens, and then by a widow in Lebanon, Eliyahu was commanded by Hashem after 3 years to return to Eretz Yisrael. Hashem has hoped that Eliyahu would return of his own initiative, that he would develop a certain sensitivity to the human condition, but to no avail. So finally, Hashem says, as you see in the sources in front of you, "Vayhi yamim rabim udvar Adonai haya Eliyahu b'shana hashlishit lemor lech yira'eh elachav ve'etzna matar al pnei ha'adama." Here we find the introduction, and at the same time, after apparently expressing a lack of sympathy and sensitivity to Am Yisrael, Hashem finally puts an end to Eliyahu's callousness by forcing him to return home. As Eliyahu was the one, however, to initiate the famine, with the famous words of Chai Hashem Elokei Yisrael Asher Amadati Lefanav Kimiyeh Hashanim Ha'ela Tal Matar Kiim Lefi Dvari. Words that we've also heard recently through the mouth of Yonah HaNavi, Halo Zed Bari Ahayuti Al Admati. Eliyahu sees himself as a messenger of God, but one who is meant to forewarn the people of his own powers. It must be therefore he who officially reverses the Dabar. It must be he who will reverse the words of the decree of the famine. And yet, instead of appearing directly before Ahab, we find the narrative continues. The Nabi told us first what was going on with Am Yisrael, and then instead of meeting Ahab directly, we find Eliyahu encountering Obadiah, Ahab's butler. The Nabi recounts the perspective of the people first, We've only been hearing Eliyahu's adventures, his narrative. And yet, what about Yisrael who are suffering during this famine? Well, the Navi tells us in a very creative way, what was going on when Eliyahu was out of the country for so long? Yizebel began massacring the various Nebiyei Emet, the prophets of truth who were left in Eretz Yisrael, perhaps as a means of encouraging Eliyahu to return, perhaps as a vengeful act against Eliyahu, or perhaps as another means of promoting her own culture, learned from Lebanon, wherein she doesn't even believe in these prophets of truth. Vayi v'achvit Yizebel at Nebiyei Hashem, v'yikachu v'adiyahu me'an Nebiyim v'yichte'em. Obadiah responds by taking 100 of them, which gives us the impression that Yisrael has killed hundreds of others, and he hides 50 ish from Ma'arab, 50 in each cave, the chokalim lechem and mayim, and provides them with lechem and mayim. While Eliyahu, perhaps even selfishly, is being provided for food on his own, to develop a sense of what Am Yisrael must be going through, Obadiah is risking his life to ensure that the Nevi'im survive. While Eliyahu is living off on his own, and his own people are suffering because of the famine that he declared, Obadiah is the one to protect the Nevi'im, despite the fact that it could have been Eliyahu's fault to begin with. Vayomer Achav al Obadiah, and another pasuk to tell us how terrible the situation is for Am Yisrael, Lech Ba'aretz. He commands of Obadiah Asher al Abayit, of the primary officer in his home, Lech Ba'aretz al Kol Mayanei Hamayim, and keep in mind that they live in the northern part of Eretz Yisrael with the Banyan and with the natural springs. And yet he tells him, go and search all the resources of water. Maybe there will be enough, even fodder, for the animals to live off of. So that at least we'll still have some cattle. No one else is left, other than the king and his primary officer, looking for food, looking for staples through which to survive. Eliyahu's encounter, then, is going to be delayed by meeting Obadiah Asher al Abayit. Although this was a chronologically brief meeting and conversation, let's note how the Navi devotes 14 psukim to their dialogue. Vayhi Obadiah Baderech, v'nei Eliyahu lifrato v'yukirehu. Obadiah recognizes Eliyahu, v'yipol al panav, and he falls down. V'yomer ha'ataza adoni Eliyahu, is this really you, Eliyahu? V'yomer lo ani, it is me. Lech amor la tzimcha, v'nei Eliyahu. Now you must go and tell Ahav that Eliyahu has arrived. Vayomer and Obadiah's response is, Nechatati, what did I do wrong? Ki atan otena tatacha biyad Ahav lahamiteni. Why do you want to kill me in the hands of Ahav? Hai, Hashem alukacha, niyish roi mamlacha, asher shlo shalach adoni sham levakshecha. Do you know how Ahav has sent messengers to all the lands around Eretz Yisrael looking for you? Vamru ayin. And yet everyone has come back with a negative report. He's been swearing left and right, damning everyone around him for not finding you. And now, and now you tell me to be the messenger to say, ah, Eliyahu has appeared. And then I'm going to leave you. And then, sure enough, you'll be gone with the wind once again. And when I tell Ahav that you're here and he won't find you, Baradani, he'll kill me. I just want to remind you that I'm a good person. I'm an Eved Hashem. Hello, Ugad Ladumi at Asher Asiti, Baharub Yizebel Nevi'e Hashem. Haven't you heard what I did? I risked my life when Yizebel was killing all the Nevi'im. Vachbem Nevi'e Hashem, the 8 ish, 50 ish, b'ma'ara, something that we know already. But he wants to make sure that Eliyahu knows. You know that I hid 50 men, 50 Nevi'im in each cave, Achakalim, Lachim, Umayim. Vatata Omer, Lechamor Ladunachi, Ne Eliyahu, Vela Aradati, and now I want to just remind you. But if I tell Ahav that you're here, he's going to kill me. Vayom Eliyahu. And tell Eliyahu assures Obadiah Chai Hashem. He swears with the same terminology that Obadiah himself has incorporated in Pasuk Yud Chai Hashem. And with the same terminology with which he initiated the Ra'ah, he says, don't worry, I swear in the name of God, Asher Amadati Lufanav, Ki Hayom Ere'eh. What we know is something that Obadiah doesn't know. And that is the first two psukim, wherein Hashem has already told Eliyahu that he must go and appear in front of Ahav. And therefore Eliyahu assures Obadiah and says, don't worry, there's no way out of this one. I have to go, and I will appear before Ahav. And now we have to appreciate, and what's so important about this dialogue? If we take a look, we know that and the story really begins in Pasuk Gimel, like Vayikra Ahav al Obadiah. Anna ends in Pasuk Bet. But if we would just delete this entire paragraph and continue from Pasuk Bet, Vayelach Eliyahu le'ra'ut alachav, and continue Pasuk Zayin, Vayelach Obadiah le'prat achav, Vayegel Vayelach achav le'prat Eliyahu, we would have a perfectly organized type of story right here. Why we need these 14 psukim in the middle. This skill in Tanakh is known as Man Bamikram, wherein we find that the text itself employs this idea of somehow devoting a tremendous amount of psukim to tell us that chronologically, of course, this story didn't take place over a long period of time, but obviously it's important. We're meant to appreciate the significance through the numerous psukim devoted to it. But what is so significant about these psukim? After all, we could read a story just as easily without this encounter between Obadiah and Eliyahu. We could read Eliyahu who seeks to find Ahav, and then Ahav who finds Eliyahu at the end. It must be that this scene has independent value. So we're going to begin by analyzing the scene by taking a look at the psukim that we have in front of us. Psukim Gimel through Vav set the scene. And this is basically our introduction. We're introduced to a new character, a character we haven't heard of before, Obadiah, and the circumstances under which Eliyahu meets him, and eventually Ahav. This introduction prepares us for the main events, the body of the scene, which begin in Pasuk Zayin. Pasuk Zayin, Kutet Zayin, is the dialogue between Eliyahu and Obadiah, ending in Pasuk Tet Zayin, the conclusion, which is basically a description of the consequences of the encounter, Eliyahu encouraging Obadiah that he will go see Ahav, and then finally, by he kirot Ahav et Eliyahu, and then the two finally do meet each on their own. We're going to begin by asking, however, why Eliyahu even needs Obadiah? After all, Hashem has told Eliyahu, go and appear in front of Ahav, and through this I will finally bring the rain, which gives us the impression that this is a necessary component of the story. Eliyahu must appear in front of Ahav. So at first glance, we can offer that maybe Eliyahu is just stalling. He doesn't want to appear in front of Ahav. He's already retired as a Nabi HaMelech. He doesn't want to have anything to do with this personality, but in the end, he is going to go. And we know that Hashem has given him the directive, or rather the commandment, to appear in front of Ahav, and Eliyahu can only delay for so long. So why delay by appearing first in front of Obadiah? And just to show how this was a premeditated act, we contrast the two characters here of Obadiah and Eliyahu. Know how Obadiah began by Yehi Obadiah Badarek and Pasuk Zayin, Vihine Eliyahu. And Obadiah's mind, he's the primary character here. Obadiah is the main character who sees Eliyahu, and from his perspective, Vihine. Vihine is a terminology employed in Tanakh to offer us an element of surprise. He is surprised to see Eliyahu, and yet Eliyahu is not at all surprised to see Obadiah. He is anticipating this meeting. Vayikirehu. When Obadiah recognizes Eliyahu, Vayipol Pana, Vayomer Hataza Adoni Eliyahu, Eliyahu responds by saying, yes, I'm me. And therefore, you, as Ahav's butler, must go and herald my upcoming meeting with him. Which gives us the impression that Eliyahu is not at all surprised, but rather has plans on meeting Obadiah from the very beginning. A few possibilities, then, which perhaps warrant his initial meeting with Obadiah, are either that Eliyahu wants Ahav to meet him on his terms. And therefore, instead of Eliyahu initiating the meeting with Ahav directly, he uses his officer. He uses Obadiah to basically announce or pronounce Eliyahu's arrival, so that Ahav, whom Eliyahu knows is searching for him left and right, that Ahav will come and meet Eliyahu. Not so much out of self-respect, and as much as that Eliyahu wants from the very beginning, Eliyahu wants Ahav to come on his terms. Eliyahu, as we know, isn't going to bring the rain right away, but wants to use the encounter at least to catalyze the process of tshuva. And therefore, he's going to ask of Ahav to participate in a national event on Har HaKarmel. By using Obadiah, and really almost taking advantage of his status in front of Ahav, he is ensuring that Ahav will appear before him on his terms, so that Eliyahu doesn't have to appear to be the submissive character. Another possibility is that Obadiah was presented by the Navi as a tzaddik, as an eved, as a Yireh Hashem, and this is the perfect intermediary to herald Eliyahu's coming to Ahav, to teach him that only because of Obadiah, or really only in the zchut of Obadiah, only in the merit of Yireh Hashem, does Ahav deserve any type of meeting to begin with. Instead of just appearing by giving Ahav the credit of an appearance, Eliyahu is basically telling Ahav, only through Obadiahu, only through the zchut of Yirat Hashem, do we even deserve to have this meeting. A third possibility, though, is also to raise the status of Obadiahu in front of Ahav, perhaps even a subtle way of telling us that Hashem does reward the tzaddikim. Here, perhaps, Eliyahu is using Obadiahu to now, despite the fact that Obadiah has risked his life and has really countered Yezebel and Ahav's decision to kill all the Nabiim, by using Obadiah as a means of appearing in front of Ahav, Eliyahu is basically telling Ahav, look at this officer. This is a very important officer you have in front of you, hoping to raise his stature in the eyes of Ahav. But if we note, we see from the Psukim that the focus on the character and the dialogue is not even Eliyahu, but rather it's Elisha. Eliyahu is more the passive responder in the dialogue, as Elisha is the one to express his reservations, of which he has primarily two. And as pointed out by Rabbi Hanan Samit, we see a beautifully structured conversation, a really dialogue that takes place here between Obadiah and Eliyahu. Obadiah has two primary reservations. His first one begins with, Mechatati, what is my crime? What did I do wrong? Apparently, Obadiah sees himself on the defensive. He sees himself, and we'll discuss in just a moment why, he sees himself attacked by Eliyahu. What do you want with me? What did I do wrong? Mechatati, ki atanu tena tatacha biyadachav lahamiti. It seems that you have an out for me to be killed. And why do I think I'm going to be killed? Chaya shabal kecha, because Ahav has been looking left and right for you. And if I'm going to be the one to tell Ahav, ah, I found you, Ahav has a good argument against me, he's going to say, why didn't you get rid of Eliyahu? Why didn't you chain Eliyahu up and bring him to me? Mechatati, why are you incriminating me? Is Obadiah's first reservation with regard to why he doesn't want to appear in front of Ahav. But the second one, which also begins with a question, and here in Pasuk Tet, Mechatati lahamiteini, you have an out for me to be killed. He then begins something else. He says, wait a second, I want to tell you that I'm really not such a bad person. After all, I'm a Yirei Hashem. Hello, again, that's his first idea, that I'm a good person. But then he begins, Pasuki Bet, Vayani Elech Mitach, my second argument, is when I leave from you, then what will happen? Again, Baharagani. He mentions twice, Baharagani, Baharagani. Ahav will kill me, because he'll go searching for you, and ultimately, you're going to be taken away by the wind, which seems to reflect the common culture during that time that Eliyahu, who is sought after, simply cannot be found. He's the disappearing phantom of Eretz Yisrael, and as such, Obadiah here is clearly afraid that when Ahav comes looking for Eliyahu, he won't be there. He'll accuse Obadiah of being a false messenger, and he'll be killed on that night as well. So note the first question, the first reservation, Mechatati. Elisha feels he's going to be killed upon a certain crime that Eliyahu is accusing him of, Baharagani. The second begins, Ki atah natanat avdacha biyadachav lahamiteini. You're putting me in Ahav's hands to kill me again. He's afraid that Eliyahu will disappear again, and Ahav will kill him as a method of vengeance. But why is Obadiah really so afraid? Especially his first reservation. What did I do wrong, Mechatati? Why does he think that Eliyahu is incriminating him? What crime has he committed? Apparently, he senses Eliyahu is accusing him of some type of crime. And if we look carefully, we're able to see, at least from Obadiah's perspective, why he feels so defensive here. Note that when Obadiah meets Eliyahu, he greets him with the words, Ha'taze Adomi Eliyahu. Is this you, my master Eliyahu? But at the same time, perhaps there's some critique in his own presentation. Note that those exact words are incorporated in Pasuk Yudayim. Ahav is going to greet Eliyahu in a very similar terminology. Ha'taze, is this you, Ocher Yisrael? Instead of calling him Adomi Eliyahu, Ahav calls him Ocher Yisrael. One who has uprooted and undermined, negated the very essence of what Yisrael is. One who has left Yisrael to survive on its own. And yet, if you take a look back at the beginning, we're surprised that Obadiah uses this term. Ha'tazel d'ni Eliyahu, is this you, Eliyahu? Is not meant to be understood as a simple means of identifying Eliyahu. For after all, it says at the beginning of the Pasuk, Vayikareyu, Obadiah knows that it's Eliyahu. He's recognized Eliyahu. So when he appears before him and he says, Ha'tazel d'ni Eliyahu, he doesn't mean, is this you, Eliyahu, in as much as, ah, you finally have returned, Eliyahu? So perhaps there's even some subtle critique in Elisha's initial conversation with Eliyahu. And now let's see Eliyahu's response. Eliyahu says, Vayomalo, Ani, it's me. Lech amor la adomecha, hine Eliyahu. Eliyahu responds with a very clear rebuke to Obadiah. Obadiah has called him Adoni Eliyahu. Eliyahu, you are my Adon, you're my master. And yet, how does Eliyahu respond to Obadiah? Go and tell your master, referring to none other than Ahav. Go and tell Ahav that Eliyahu is here to meet him. In other words, Obadiah understands that Eliyahu is really criticizing him. You have no right to call me master. I'm not your master because you're serving another master who is diametrically opposed to what I stand for. And that is the master, your master Ahav. Whether Obadiah likes it or not, there's truth to what he says. Obadiah is a servant to two masters. He's a servant politically to the master Ahav, even if he may religiously espouse the values of Eliyahu. And therefore we understand the very next sentence. Machatati, but what did I do wrong? It's not my fault. Don't accuse me of being a traitor. Don't accuse me of not being your servant. Now we understand this a little more. He knows Eliyahu's critique and therefore responds this way. Machatati. Obadiah definitively asks, Machatati, after all, what did he say in the very next pasuk? Ame Yirei Hashem. And I'll prove it to you. Even though you may see me as Alpha's servant, I did not participate in Alpha Yizabel's murderous plan against the Nevi'im. I worked with Shem Shamayim from within the palace gates, and I risked my life to save 100 Nevi'im. The second reservation is that he's afraid that Eliyahu will disappear. And why is he afraid that Eliyahu will disappear? Obadiah is in Yirei Hashem. He understands exactly why Eliyahu decreed a famine to begin with. The people don't deserve it. They've adopted for the first time in Jewish history the Lebanese culture, the culture of Tzor and Sidon, as their religion. And nothing has changed over the past 3 years. The people haven't done any process or haven't gone through the process of tshuva. And therefore, perhaps Obadiah understands that Eliyahu is only teasing him. Nothing has changed. And therefore, why should you appear in front of Ahav? Why should you bring rain? Eliyahu doesn't even mention to Obadiah what the point is, what the purpose of the encounter is. He doesn't mention to Obadiah that he's even going to be speaking to Ahav. And therefore, Obadiah has the impression that Eliyahu just wants to intimidate Ahav, which leads us to the second explanation of his reservation. As far as he knows, Eliyahu is merely playing with Ahav to further intimidate him. He never says he wants to have a dialogue with Ahav. And just as we find later, upon Eliyahu's final leaving of Am Yisrael, the Nevi'im of Yericho say, oh yes, that master of yours, Eliyahu, they turn to Elisha eventually and say he disappears with the wind. Just like Mary Poppins coming in and coming out, here we find that Obadiah is afraid. He says, that's the type of personality you are. You're just playing with me. You're using me as a game piece to further intimidate Ahav because you're going to tell him that you're here and he's going to go out looking for you and then you're going to disappear once again. You're going to come and go and you're going to leave people to die just like you did to begin. As you love people to die in famine, you're going to leave me to die as a traitor in the hands of Ahav. But still, if we take a look at the story, why do we have to hear so much about Obadiah and his reservations? We're never going to hear about this character. He disappears off the face of Tanakh, no longer in the picture of Jewish history. It's nice for Eliyahu indeed to pacify him, to assure him, don't worry. I assure you in the name of Hashem that I stand before, that today I will appear in front of Ahav, but still, again, we're never going to hear of Obadiah again. It must be that this narrative is not here to teach us about the character of Obadiah himself, but rather his personality as representing many others in Jewish history. Obadiah's reservations, due to his lack of knowledge of Tzivui Hashem, justify his behavior. He doesn't know that Eliyahu will definitely appear before Ahav, because Eliyahu doesn't tell him. We, the reader, know that, to a certain degree, Eliyahu is in the right. Eliyahu will appear in front of Ahav and nothing will happen to Obadiah. So why include Obadiah's reservation if really they're unfounded? Because as far as we know, they are very well-based. And here the Navi is telling us it's okay for Obadiah to express himself this way, even in front of a Navi. His ideas, his political stance, as we're going to elaborate upon now, is supposed to be heard. And the Navi wants to preserve the debate between Obadiah and Eliyahu as a constant debate between personalities throughout history. It's not Obadiah's reservations that are really the focus, but rather his relationship to Eliyahu's actions and personality. The Navi includes Obadiah's critique of Eliyahu to offer an alternate method of responding to a religious crisis of the time. Obadiah doesn't know what we know. He doesn't know that Hashem sent Eliyahu to Ahab, which absolves Obadiah of his lack of understanding and enhances our appreciation of his personality. In addition to Hashem's critique of Eliyahu's mannerism and lack of sensitivity, the Nevi here adds the human elements of the Jew. Within the people themselves, or even amongst these staunch religious advocates of Hashem epitomized here by Obadiah, there is a critique of Eliyahu's ways. Obadiah clearly recognized Eliyahu's greatness by falling, and as evident from his response, by Kirehu, by Yipolo Kanav, but he disagrees with the stringencies against the people. And as we're going to see now, through an analysis, here with the Nevi Zadis, as he presents three parallels, or really clear parallels, with the three earlier stories of Eliyahu abandoning the people. For those who remember the first scene of Eliyahu, after Eliyahu declares the famine against Am Yisrael, Hashem tells him to go to a Nachal, Nachal Crete, a Nachal that will miraculously provide water for Eliyahu and ravens who provide food for Eliyahu. And ultimately, Vayivash HaNachal, Ki Lo HaYavesher. Eventually, even that river will dry up. Even along the Transjordan, there are rivers that dry up because Eliyahu has declared the lack of rain. And here, what the Nabi tries to teach us is that Hashem was trying to teach Eliyahu, be a little more sensitive. Do you know that you yourself are going to suffer together with the plight of the people? And perhaps we see that through the Obadiah episode before us. While Eliyahu is being provided for, is surviving by Nachal Chwit, what is happening to his contemporaries? The Nabi points out his contemporaries aren't by Nachal Chwit. They're in a situation of Chareit. They're being wiped out by Yizebel. And as we see, and who stands out? Eliyahu, who has been provided by Lechem and Mayim by ravens miraculously. It's Obadiah who then stands up, V'chukalev Lechem u'mayim. This is a subtle critique against Eliyahu. Shame on you, Eliyahu. You were already criticized for leaving the people, and now this is a further critique. Do you notice who your foil is? Here is Obadiah, and instead of being provided for, he's providing for others, something that you should be doing. And obviously, as he goes and he searches, and they find that all the Nachalim have dried up, this reminds us of Nachal Chwit drying up. All the characters are suffering because of Eliyahu's decree. Notice also the similar vocabulary of Nachal and Chwit mentioned in these three psukim, and also the idea of Kalkala, how Eliyahu is being provided for while Obadiah is providing for others. He risks his life in order to ensure that others will survive. The second scene of Eliyahu is when he's told by Hashem, after Nachal Chwit dries up, to go up north to Lebanon, where he shall find some woman who will provide for him. Sure enough, that story begins with, all of a sudden, Eliyahu enters the city, and lo and behold, before him is an Isha Ohana, is a widowed woman. So to hear, the story begins, his encounter with Obadiah begins, Eliyahu. Things happen to Eliyahu by surprise. Last time he encountered an Isha Ohana who would provide for him, and now he's going to encounter Obadiah, both of whom are going to give, or are meant to sensitize Eliyahu and give him the message, shame on you, Eliyahu. Shame on you for leaving the people to die. The story with the Isha Mana begins with the terms also of Chai Hashem, of this woman swearing in the name of God. And here, Obadiah as well begins, Chai Hashem Elokecha Mieshko Yomam Lecha. Both are going to resist Eliyahu's request. First, the Almana, the widow who doesn't have sufficient food to provide for her one and only child. And now Obadiah, who's afraid also to risk his life. And then, as we know from the end of the story, both are going to end up complying to Eliyahu's wishes. Obadiah will go and herald the encounter with Ahab, and the Shalmana will indeed provide miraculously for Eliyahu. So too, a similar vocabulary. Mayim and Lechem are referred to here as the Lechem and Mayim provided for Eliyahu by the widowed woman. Chai Hashem, we mentioned, and the Almana also is afraid. What am I afraid of? Why don't I want to provide for you? Babatnu! I'm afraid we're going to die. I'm afraid I won't have sufficient food. I only have a little bit of flour to provide for one cookie, basically, she says to Eliyahu. And I, together with my son, will die. So too, Obadiah critiquing Eliyahu and saying, Babatni, or Baharigani, Achav is going to kill me as well. A subtle literary critique, almost trying to compound upon Eliyahu the rebuke that is offered to him by virtue of not being sensitive to the plight of the people on the national level, and here personally expressed by Obadiah. The third episode, as we know, is when Eliyahu, still by the Isha al-Manah, rejuvenates her child, bringing him back to life. That story began. Nechatati, what did I do wrong? I provided for you, and now you're in my house, and my child is dead. So to hear the story of Obadiah begins with the same argument. Nechatati, what did I do wrong to you? Why are you putting me in a life-threatening situation? Eliyahu then must be asking himself at this point, indeed, why do people think that I'm out to get them? Why am I such an incriminating and intimidating character? In both cases, Eliyahu has to assure the subject that he's not out to kill him, as he tells the Isha al-Manah and encourages her that he will bring the child back to life. And here, as he tells Obadiah not to worry, he will appear in front of Ahab. And therefore, the sense we get is that the Obadiah narrative is not really about Obadiah at all, but rather presents us with the contrast of two worldviews. The worldview of Obadiah, which clearly counters the foil character here of Eliyahu. Obadiah, who is the people's representative to Eliyahu, trying to tell him you did something wrong. You put us all in a life-threatening situation. You made us all risk our lives, or you were miraculously provided for. You were completely insensitive to us as you were living off on your own. And here are the two worldviews regarding how do we respond then as Yirei Hashem to crises. Eliyahu ben Abi the Gadol Hador chooses to defy. He chooses to debate. He chooses to counter with frontal violence, with vigilance, with protest and anger, and ultimately leads to his secession from the government, wanting nothing to do with his country or his countrymen, as he retires, or rather resigns again and again, as a Navi HaMelech, and ultimately is told by Hashem to leave through chariots of fire. Obadiah, however, is the Ish Yireyat Hashem. He chooses a different path, to heroically work together with Ahab, to participate in the cabinet and influence from within. Perhaps he cannot save all the Nabiim or all the starving people of his generation, but only some. He may die, but he will at least serve to counter Yezebel's evil influence. He will serve as the strong opposition, compromising at times to achieve a greater good. On a personal level, Obadiah submits himself before Eliyahu and Abi. He falls on his face upon seeing him, and refers to Eliyahu as Adumi, my master, and continuously himself as Abdacha, I am your servant. But despite his recognition of Eliyahu's greatness, he adopts a different political stance than Eliyahu. He emphasizes his opposition and tries to show Eliyahu clear accomplishments he has achieved through working with Ahab from within, as opposed to Eliyahu who has disappeared and has only achieved the disenchanting state of the people, who has only achieved distance and intimidating his own people. Obadiah wants Eliyahu to know that, hello, who God got to me, don't you know what I have done? I responded differently than you, and I have succeeded. The Navi records this entire dialogue to present one with a different, perhaps even more diplomatic view, a view that stands, or that is represented by Obadiah through his thought, through his policies, and justifies it against other possible responses of debate and protest. And here we find that the Navi wants to give us a life lesson. There are two ways of responding to crisis. One can debate, like Eliyahu, or one can be diplomatic, like Obadiah. Both are Yirei Hashem. One an Abi, the Gadol Hador, the other who is serving within the government itself. And as we know, there's no resolution here on the part of the Navi. As mentioned in the beginning, Chazal teach us dynamic lessons as well, philosophical, behavioral, social, and political, as represented both through characters and situations in Tanakh, as well as religious sages, or through religious sages of Talmudic times. What we're going to do now, then, is explore a very similar story, a story that we're going to see as perhaps even built off of this Obadiah Eliyahu encounter, to give us a sense that it wasn't just these two characters, these two paradigms in Tanakh, who serve to represent two worldviews, but we always have these different worldviews. We have these different opinions within our own people, within our own government, within clashes of Am Yisrael, within the Dati, the Umi sector as well. And Chazal want to tell us that there are always different personalities, both the Dolei Hador, who can represent these worldviews. Begin then with the same story from the Sefer Avodah Zarah, that we said on the Aleph, with the two characters this time, being Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma and Rabbi Hananya ben Shadia. Tanu Rabbanan, Shechala Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, and the Rebbe of Rabbi Hanina ben Shadia, the second and here third generation of Tana in the northern area of Israel, Halach Rabbi Hanina ben Shadia to Bakro. Rabbi Kisma was sick, and Rabbi Hanina ben Shadia came to visit him. Amarlo, Hanina Achi, Yata Yodea, Sheuma Zo min Hashamayim. Then he is asking here, Rabbi Hanina ben Shadia, you know that this nation here, referring to the Umam, the nationality of the Romans, under whose very strict and torturous reign they're living now, you know that it was really all defeated by Shamayim, and I'll prove it to you. Shechriba Bito, the Sarfat Tekhalo. After all, the Romans were successful in destroying and burning the Beit Hamikdash, Vargad Hatidat, and killed our scholars, Vidatova, Vadayim Mikayemet, and they're still around, which must mean that Hashem wants them to be here, and no matter what we do, they're supposed to be here. Ah, but in the meantime, my dear students, Rabbi Hanina ben Shadia, ani shamati alecha, she'ata yoshev v'osek b'Torah, ha'makil kilot v'rabim, v'sefer munach lecha v'chaykecha. But I hear that while the Romans are going and doing whatever they're doing, you're learning Torah, but not just learning Torah, you're learning Torah in public. With the Sefer Torah munach lecha, as if to say you're walking around in a very proud way, with the Sefer Torah upon your heart at all times. In other words, what is Rabbi Kisma? What is Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma trying to tell Rabbi Hanina ben Shadia? What is with you? Don't you understand that we're supposed to be working with the Romans? If they're here, even though we don't want them to be here, how are we supposed to respond to this political crisis? We're supposed to understand that we're supposed to work together with them. If Hashem wants them here, then this is a decree of Yishamayim, and you shouldn't be defying the decrees of the Romans. Why are you walking around defying the decree of teaching Torah in public? Amarlo, min Hashamayim yirachamu. Don't worry, Hashem will take care of me. And Rabbi Yossi says, really? Ani omer alecha dvarim shel tam. I'm telling you real issues over here. I'm telling you that min hashamayim, it's so clear that the Romans are supposed to be here. And you tell me, oh, don't worry, min hashamayim yirachamu, that Hashem will take care of me. Or in other words, Hashem will take care of me. Tolim al hames, we don't work that way. You're going to do whatever you want, expecting that Hashem will take care of you. You're going to defy and protest. Tamani, lo yishrutu otcha. The Sefer Torah Ba'ish. I wouldn't be surprised if Rabbi Hanina ben Shadia, in response to this, they don't burn you, together with the Sefer Torah, in fire. Scary thought for a Rebbe to tell a Talmud, shame on you. You deserve to be burned with the Sefer Torah for this. And the horror of the soul is that we know this was the fate of Rabbi Hanina ben Shadia. What is Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma telling him? Perhaps he's telling him the basic consequence of teaching Torah. He knows that how did the Romans punish those who learn Torah? They're going to wrap you up with the Sefer Torah and burn you. What do you mean, Min Hashamayim Yirachamu? Hashem wants the Romans to be here right now. Don't protest. Don't defy. Don't learn Torah when they don't want you to learn Torah, or at least learn Torah in private. But what's with you? You should be a little more diplomatic, Rabbi Hanina ben Shadia, because I'm warning you. You're going to be punished for this. I think he's saying more than that. He's saying, don't you understand what the consequence is? You're going to have to leave this world. You're going to leave the world and lo yishrutu otcha v'et Sefer Torah. You're going to leave the world with the Sefer Torah on fire. Don't you know what happens to people who try to defy the Gzardin of Hashem? Don't you know, Rabbi Hanina, what happens when we protest and when we put the people in danger? Don't you know what happens when you don't display sensitivity to Am Yisrael and instead you put them in a situation where they may all die? You end up leaving this world ba'ish. You end up leaving like Eliyahu. Rabbi Yosef and Kisma is trying to encourage Rabbi Hanina ben Shadia not to be like Eliyahu. But that's what Rabbi Hanina ben Shadia is. He has the same character as Eliyahu. I'm going to defy. I'm going to learn Torah. I'm going to stand before Hashem and represent the godly values despite what the Romans may impose. And Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma is saying, can't you be more like Obadiah? I'm more like Obadiah. Can't you work with the Romans? It won't be so bad. Don't you realize Hashem wants them to do this right now? Amarlo Rabbi, Mani l'chaye olam haba. Apparently Rabbi Hanina ben Shadia is a little worried, but not so worried. He says, okay, so if indeed I'm killed, or if I go up like Eliyahu in chariots of fire, what will happen to me in Olam Haba? In other words, just like Eliyahu, he's not so concerned with the short-term goals. He's not so concerned with, okay, what's going to happen now in our times, and as much as what's going to happen years after. What will happen in Olam Haba? Amar lo kul ma'aseh bal yadaha. So Rabbi Yossi says, well, do you have any ma'asi? Which gives us the impression that Rabbi Yossi, for a moment, doubts whether or not Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion is really involved with other people. Well, how sensitive or insensitive of a person are you? How much like Eliyahu are you? Are you really going to leave the people behind you? Any midot? But Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma is trying to say, so he doesn't ask, how much Torah have you learned? He doesn't ask, how many mitzvot ben adam l'makom have you performed? But rather, ma'aseh bal yadcha. Do you have any ma'asim to leave? Have you expressed any social sensitivity? Are you like Eliyahu? Or are you like Obadiah? How sensitive or insensitive are you? He says, Amar lo, ma'ot shol kurim nitchalku li be'mamel shol tzedakah v'chilatim ami. And he says, I do have a midat tovah going for me. What's that? Nitchalku li. I set aside some money for kurim, but mistakenly it got confused. And I wasn't sure whether this money is really for kurim. So you know what I did? I used this money and I distributed all the money amongst the indigent of the city, all the poor people. But somewhat ironic is, did he plan on giving this money to tzedakah? No. Notice the passive terminology. Nitchalfuli. The money was switched on me. I don't know what this money was meant to be used for, and therefore I decided to play it safe and give it to the different poor people. Just another expression of Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, who does have a midat tovah, who's sensitive, but we can add in, he's sensitive by default. Right? Only because of nitchalfulo hama'ot. But Rabbi Yosef and Kusma says, okay, at least that. Amar lo, in pain, mechalkacha yechalki, and baracha yechalki. Somewhere, Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion, I wasn't trying to disparage you entirely. I wasn't trying to tell you that you're a bad person. I want to have a chelek with you. I want to have a chelek in Olam Haba. What I was trying to tell you is that I disagree with your political response. Of course you're a good person. There's nothing wrong with learning Torah and doing a few ma'asim tovim here and there, but I just disagree fundamentally with your reaction to what's going on politically. Sure, Amru lo hayu yamim muatim, achi niftar Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma. As a nice parallel in the story basically ends by telling us, just as the story began with Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma being very frail and sick, the story ends with Rabbi Yossi dying. So for all intents and purposes, Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma's character is no longer in the story. However, the story began with Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion by Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma's bedside as this engagement of discussion was taking place. And we're not surprised. Who went to bury Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma? Well, he was a diplomatic character, and therefore the Romans loved him and respected him, and he worked together with the Romans. So all the Romans, the great Roman generals, all went, Kol Gadolei Romi L'Kavro, Vispidu Hez Beit Gadol. U'b'chazaratan, Nitza'u Al Rabbi Chanina Ben Tradion, Shaya Yoshev Bo Sefer Torah, U'makil Kilot V'Rabim, V'Sefer Torah, U'nach Lo V'Beko. On their way back from the funeral, they saw Rabbi Chanina Ben Tradion learning Torah with the Sefer Torah prominently displayed in front of him. Which verse it tells us, did Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion attend Rabbi Yosef in Kisma's funeral? I'm not going to go where the Romans are going. I disagree fundamentally with this political stance. I don't think we should have anything to do with the Romans. I'm calling the vote to this Gadol Hador, but I have my own view. I'm also a Yirei Hashem. I learned Torah. I'm not going to have anything to do with the Romans or this political philosophy espoused by Rabbi Yosef in Kisma. Me that it seems like he was right there when they were coming back from the funeral, almost as if to make a stamp, to basically make a point of saying, don't you see what I'm doing? I disagree with that. I think that you should know what I'm doing. I defy you, Romans, and I want you to know that I'm defying you. I stand up in clear opposition to what you represent. I'm going to teach Torah Barabim in a public fashion, and I'm going to display it prominently. And therefore, also to show us the juxtaposition, what did Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma warn Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion? If that's going to be your stance, then beware of the consequences. The consequences will be, firstly, on the most basic level, that they're going to punish you. But secondly, if you espouse the opinion of the Eliyahu Hanavi, know that you're going to end up in fire. And sure enough, here we find, they saw him with the Sefer Torah in front of him, displayed in a prominent fashion. Have you, Prachul, the Sefer Torah, So they took that same sacred Torah and said, this is your political philosophy? We'll wrap you up in it. They kifu abachavileis morot, and they put different bundles of wool, vatitu abahem et ha'or, and they lit the bundles of wool so that it would provide for fire. They wrapped him up by placing both damp and dry bundles of wool here to elongate the burning process. Today shalot tzeinish matol mehira to torture him slowly. Amram opitol, and his daughter asked him, Abba, should I see you this way? It gives us the impression that she's asking an innocent question. Do you want me to be there when you die? Amar lo. Then Malay Amin is Rafi with Adi, Ayahad Abar Kashavi. Ashash Amin is Raf, the Sefer Torah. Misha Mavakesha, Bonash, the Sefer Torah, the Yavakesha of the says, if I was really dying alone, then this would be very hard for me. But this isn't hard for me, because I'm dying with what I believe in. I'm dying with my Sefer Torah. Therefore, anyone who wishes really to disparage the Torah, and that's the person who is insulting me as well, that I'm dying with what I stand for. And I stand for the values of Torah. Note the uncompromising nature here of Rabbi Hanina ben Tadfon due to his own values. Amulo Talmida. The next encounter here, first his daughter and now his students. Rebbe Matarolev. Now the fire is going. They ask him, what do you see? They're convinced that Rabbi Hanina ben Tadfon liked Eliyahu. And here is a very interesting dialogue, just like Eliyahu told Elisha, if you can see me going up in the fire, then you're a true Nabi, and then you'll even receive double my portion of Nebuah. So too, the Talmidim see themselves as Elisha. Okay? We want to see what you see. They're convinced that Rabbi Hanina ben Tadfon is just like Eliyahu Nabi. What did you see? Amarahin, Ilayon is reading. I see the papers being burned, Lotio Prachot. But the letters are reading. They tell him, if that's the case, then just hasten the process and open up your mouth so that in a passive way at least, the smoke will come in and you'll die faster. He is against passive euthanasia as well. Nope. Hashem is the one who gave me my neshama. I don't want to have any part of taking it away. He has to take it away. And now, the third conversation. Amarlo, Hatzatanuri. Hatzatanuri, whom Rashi understands, is simply the officer in charge. Others see as the personal name for the Roman guard who's overseeing his torture and method of killing him. Rabbi, Imani Marbe B'Shalhebet, Menotel Sfugit Shal Tzemer Mi'alikha. If I, notice what he says, if I raise the fire and I take out some of the sponges of wool, Atam Abiyani L'Chayei Olam Haba, will you take me with you to Olam Haba? Which on one hand, on a very simplistic level, is trying to show us the noble attitude of this Roman officer, who is so convinced that this sage standing in front of him, of course, will go to Olam Haba. But it's also a very selfish attitude. If I hasten this process, or basically make it harder for you, but faster for you, then will you take me with you to Olam Haba? And let's see Rabbi Hanina ben Tadfon's response. Amar lo, king. Yes, I will. Yishavali! Note that this dialogue is taking place while Rabbi Hanina ben Tadfon is dying, right, with his body being burned. So, Hatzatanuri is not meant to serve as some type of merciful character who has rachamim, but rather a very selfish character. And therefore he says, okay, I'm not going to do this until you swear to me. Okay, fine, Yishavalo. Miyad, kirbaba shal levit, v'natas fogim shal tzemer mi'alibo. Yatzan yishvatov v'nivah. And sure enough, Neshama went out rightly. And at first we take a look at the last of these dialogues and get a sense, perhaps, some Parshanim believe that maybe Rabbi Hanina ben Tadfon at this very last moment decided to adopt the policy of Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma. And maybe he decided to work, so to speak, together with the Romans. But I believe otherwise. I believe that Tzuruah, Rabbi Hanina ben Tadfon's dying moment, he's not willing to work with the Romans, but rather he says, you want a chelek in Olam Haba? That you have to do something, you have to stand for my values also. And at that moment, Afu kafat nafal etol ha'or. We know that Hatzatanuri joined Rabbi Hanina ben Tadfon in the fire, basically espousing the same value. Yatsa bat kol ba'amra, which goes back to even Rabbi Hanina ben Tadfon, who was worried with the life's events or life's course of action, and as much as, will I have a chelek in Olam Haba? He asked Rabbi Yosef and Kisma, and who is a similar character? And the end are going to die together. Will I have a chalek in Olam Haba? He asked Rabbi Hanina ben Trazion. Rabbi Hanina ben Trazion notices that in order to have a chalek in Olam Haba, according to Rabbi Yosef and Kisma, it doesn't matter what your political views are in this world, and as much as your ma'asim to be. And therefore, he says, if you do this ma'aseh tov, if you perform this noble act, then you will have a chalek in Olam Haba. Upon which a bat kol came down and said, Rabbi Hanina ben Trazion ben Chatzatanori, Mizomen Menhein, L'chaye Olam Haba. Rabbi Hanina ben Trazion did his ma'aseh tov by giving from the money set aside for Purim, and Chatzatanori did his ma'aseh tov. They both end up in Olam Haba. Achadu. But then Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi heard the story two generations later, and he cried. And we know that Rabbi also cried when he heard that Elazar ben Judai became known as Rabbi Elazar ben Judai after committing prostitution with every whore under the sun and finally crying and doing tshuva while putting his head between his legs. And he cried with the same comment and said, Yesh kana olamo b'sha'a achat. There are some for whom it's so easy to buy their chelek in Olam Haba with just one moment. Yesh kana olamo b'kama shanim. But the rest of us work our entire lives for this. And maybe he says this out of depression. It's not fair! Chatzatanori, Rabbi Elazar ben Judai, they get their Olam Haba so quickly. And look at these Gedolei Hador, look at Rabbi Hanina ben Trazion, look at myself, we have to work so hard for this. But maybe at the same time, he's saying in triumph, you know what? It's not really so difficult to get a chelek in Olam Haba, as long as you have a ma'aseh tov. But as soon as we see those who have a chelek in Olam Haba, we have to once again go back and see, it's very nice, that's the chelek in Olam Haba. What Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma was trying to teach Rabbi Hanina ben Trazion is, forget about Olam Haba just for a moment, how about Olam Hazeh? And maybe that's what Rabbi is really crying for. Says it's very nice that Rabbi Elazar ben Judai had a chelek in Olam Haba. And it's nice that Chatzatanori had a chelek in Olam Haba. But they may have a chelek in Olam Haba, but what was the chelek in Olam Hazeh? As soon as they did one noble act, their lives ended. What a shame. Which only forces us to reflect a little more. Which forces us this evening, Abu Shanarada, to reflect upon our course of action. How are we going to respond? How do we respond to the governments, our governments, various policies? Do we protest the fighting? Do we go out and accuse? Ultimately, do we stand for our values and try to work from within? Here, I must say that there's no answer. Hanina ben Trazion is lauded, but so is Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma. Obadiah has given his 14 psukim, but we know Eliyahu's position as well. And perhaps this is what the Navi and this is what Chazal are trying to teach us. They're both methods, but then again, look at also these two characters. Look at Eliyahu and look at Rabbi Hanina ben Trazion. Both of them are going to stand for their values, but ultimately are going to be taken away in fire. Perhaps then we're supposed to learn that we're meant to maximize, as Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma was saying, and as Obadiah was trying to say, maybe we're supposed to be working from within. Maybe we will lose. Maybe we'll lose lives. Maybe we'll lose our own children. But perhaps, maybe we'll be able to save some Nevi'im along the way. Maybe some good can come out of this too. On one hand, Obadiah is very defensive. Ma chatati! What have I done? Because maybe he understands that there is an alternate method as well. And Eliyahu says, yes, I stand for that method. Rabbi Hanina ben Trazion says, I hold the sacred Torah up defiantly, and I'm willing to sacrifice my life for it. On the other hand, Yesh kana olamo b'sha'a achat. Yesh kana olamo b'kama shanim. And with this, I just want to end on a more positive note. Just tonight, as I was driving here, a friend of mine told me that she gave birth to a girl and they're naming her tomorrow. Morning, Rosh Hashanah Rabba. First thing, I'm not going to tell you just in case some of you know who it is. But they're going to name her a name referring to Rosh Hashanah Rabba, some connotation of Mayim. But the second name, they didn't know what to call her. They want to call her something that is more or less depictive of what the day of Rosh Hashanah Rabba is all about. As I mentioned, Dina, Din. No, we don't want any Dina association. And how about the idea that there are so many beautiful terminologies and imagery that's used in the Hoshana? The Tamara, the Amtalu Tamar, Before Rabbi Diyah even Abba Hashem answering, also their beautiful, my name, Bracha, Shira, Hodaya, Chagit, Merchag, Sukkot. No, no, no. When I said, no, how about the name? Eliyama. Right? Because what do we ask for? Ana, on the day of Hoshana Rabba. Ana Hashem, Hoshiana. Ana Hashem, Aneinu, Vyom Karinu. Hashem, answer us on the day that we call out to you. Answer us, Hashem, and during our time of crisis. So Eliyama, Hashem answers. And she thought about it for a while and said, I thought about that name. The problem is that name fits the fact that Hashem has already answered. Eliyama, Hashem has answered me by giving me a child. But that's not what we ask for in Hashanah Rabbah. At this stage, we're still in a state of flux. We don't know that this year has given us. We don't know what they wrote, Tovot, Be'ezrat Hashem, Hashem has planned. And therefore, what do we really ask for in Hashanah Rabbah? Amna Hashem. Aminu v'yom kavinu. Not Anna with an ayin, but Anna with an aluk. Please, Kadosh Baruch Hu. So instead, she's naming her daughter Anna El. Anna El, Hashem, please. God, please. Please answer us this year. Please answer us as we don't know how to respond. Please answer us, Kadosh Baruch Hu, and give us the koach to go on. The koach to take a tragedy and to be able to change the perspective on the course of action. The koach not to return to normal life, but to be able to take what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us and to direct that with our actions, with our beliefs, and ultimately, as we all call out tonight and tomorrow, Nihon Mitzar Paratecha, we call out from Tzara, we call out from a very harsh year, from near personal and national losses, we call out, really out of desperation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, saying, we don't know how to respond. Are we meant to be those diplomats? Are we meant to espouse the positions of Ovadia and Rabbi Yosef and Kisma? Or maybe we're meant to respond with the harsh methods of Eliyahu and of Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion. But whatever the case is, when Hamitza Karatika, Anani Boyachatka, Hashem from the Tzara, please answer us, Bimercha. Please answer us, Bimercha Yadayim. Please answer us, Bimeba, Bimayim Rabbi. Please answer us with that sense of belief. Please answer us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with no more sacrifices. Please answer us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that we can be zocher, both for the Chayei Olam Haba, but also for the Chayei Olam Hazeh. Please answer us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we recite tonight, as we learn different methods of response, please give us the koach to respond.